before you could grow the beard to serve as like a balance slash distraction, was that the motivation for the mullet? Like, I want something to take people's eyes off my nose?
No, the motivation for the mullet was because I was a
Because it
rocker,
was
dude.
1989.
Yeah,
Right.
we rock, man. That mullet, I had a great mullet. What a time to be alive.
Welcome to another episode of Low Rollers. This is episode number 13. So, for you superstitious listeners, just turn it off now. See you next week. For those of you who are still here, I'm Eric Raskin. I'm joined by Jeff Edelstein. We are writers for CasinoReports.com, LotteryGeeks.com, Props.com. Thank you for joining us. We'll be with you for the next 25 hours, talking nonstop, no bathroom breaks. Seriously, Jeff, I'm sorry to say that you have slipped a spot in the verbosity rankings among New Jersey men in their 50s. What's your realistic line for how many consecutive hours you could spend on your feet talking no bathroom breaks?
Am I training like Booker did, who stopped eating
That's
on
right.
Friday and
Right.
stopped
That's
drinking on Sunday?
serious commitment. So no, let's say no training other than you haven't just chugged any water that's gonna.
3.5 hours,
All right. All
which
right.
is,
Yeah.
and I don't think I'd make it. I think I'd go under on that because I gotta take it. Unless, I mean, did he wear a diaper? I mean, I don't think he wore a diaper. But like, I think you had. If I were him, I think he did wear a diaper. I've changed my
You're
position.
saying he wore a diaper, but you're guessing he didn't use it.
Yeah, because if he didn't wear a diaper, he's running the risk of having to stop, and losing the floor. So you have to, I think he has to wear the diaper as a backup just in case. Whether or not he used it or not, I we'll never know.
Ooh.
But how do you not wear a diaper? He's going out to set the record. He wanted to break Thurman's record, right?
Right, and he did.
And he
Yes.
did. And so I think you have to put the diaper on. You have to like be, you have to be prepared.
I suppose so. I wonder now if there are any good photos that show full body that we can like see whether there's any apparent padding going on in that area.
Yeah, this is the beauty of life because, like, if somebody had told you, like, even a week ago, that you would be talking about a grown man and his diaper wearing, you'd be like, I doubt that's going to happen. But here we
And
are.
yet, yeah, no, I did bet the over 0.5 conversations about grown men in diapers. So actually, I'm cashing this one.
Good for you.
Yeah,
That's a
and it was
smart bet.
great. It was big plus money.
Right. Well, I'll tell you somebody who's not wearing a diaper, and that's Dennis Ehling. He's a partner with the firm Blank Rome. And listen, if you're at all confused with prediction markets, CFTC, and all that stuff, listen to Ehling in a few minutes. This is a man who very clearly knows what he's talking about.
Yes.
I can't stress that enough. But before we get to the interview, there's also some very big news in the world of gambling. Eric, please take it away.
Yeah, so the biggest news story of the week is all that prediction market stuff, but we're going to save all that for the interview with Dennis. So instead, our main story focuses on California sports betting. At the Indian Gaming Trade Show and Convention in San Diego on Tuesday, representatives of the sports books that make up the Sports Betting Alliance, that's FanDuel, DraftKings, BetMGM, and Fanatics, along with several California tribal gaming leaders, had a semi-public meeting in which they discussed a plan to bring legal sports betting to California. Some backlash followed over reporters being invited to the meeting and covering it, and we can discuss that separately. But the main story is this: there's a proposal being discussed. The timeline is pointing toward trying to get sports betting on the 2028 ballot. The tribes would largely be able to call the shots about who gets licensed, and the major operators would be putting up the money to fund the initiative. To be clear, this was just a discussion of a possible framework, not an actual plan yet, but movement toward legalizing sports betting in California is automatically huge news. So, Jeff, your takeaways from what you're seeing and hearing here, how optimistic anyone should be that California will have traditional sports betting in about 4 years or so?
Yeah, maybe, probably not. I mean, this, once again, after our reporting and to quote Rickon from Severance, we had a Trojan horse or something that
Sure.
we got a reporter in there. But Yeah, I mean, obviously the tribal, groups came out and said that this is an idea, maybe, who knows? Victor Rocha is like, it's dead on arrival. I don't know what it's going to take to like get everybody on the same page here. I guess the fact that they're sitting in the same room and not cursing at each other is that I take as a positive development.
Right.
It just seems like it's just so funny to me that, I've always looked at California as like things float east. Jimmy Buffett famously sang in the 80s, they even have sushi at the mall in California, right? Where, like everything happens in California first and then it trickles out to everywhere else. This is obviously the exact opposite, with California like in the dark ages still when it comes to this. Again, the fact they're in the same room and talking, I guess, is a positive development. I guess maybe Casino reports we're inadvertently set it back a year or two. I mean, it's,
Right. Yeah, that was an unexpected twist there with us becoming part of the story. I guess maybe this is a good spot to formally on the podcast welcome Jill Dorson back into our professional lives. Not the exact splash she was looking to make in her first week, but
Well, it's quite a
she did make a
splash.
splash.
Yeah, it's
So
quite a
welcome back
splash.
to her. And while we're at it, Chris Altruda now full time with us as well. So
Why don't you explain real
welcome back.
quick what the controversy is so that people know what we're talking about?
So she was invited to this meeting by it sounds like by the SBA people and according to her and when as our boss Brett Smiley wrote Wednesday night that, we stand by her reporting that she was invited and that she confirmed that the meeting was on the record. Now she may have initially misinterpreted some of what was presented and then updated the article to reflect the pushback that she got on some of the things that she wrote. But you can't invite a reporter and tell them it's on the record and then get upset that the reporter is reporting on it, which is so
Of
that's the
course.
controversy here, is she reported on this. And so perhaps it sounds like, I guess, the tribal interests didn't know it was on the record. Maybe I don't know, but that's the controversy. But she's in the room. She was given clearance to report on it. So she did. And I have the same main positive. If we're trying to have a positive takeaway from all this, I have the same one as you that what we know is that there's open communication going on C compared to 2022. When the operators and the tribes were adversaries, now we at least see that they're clearly trying to work together. But from what we know of the proposal, and again, just a loose proposal, whatever, however you want to categorize it, the tribes seem guaranteed to profit at no risk, and the operators are taking on all the costs and the risks, and then sharing their profits with the tribes. And it just makes me think that the tribes are. We're paying attention to what happened in New York. They saw that to enter one of the most populous states, the operators are willing to concede in all sorts of ways just to get a foot in the door. So that the tribes are really pushing it in California. They want to see just how borderline unprofitable can we make this for the operators and still have them want a license in California.
Well, I guess I don't blame them. They, to pun intended, hold all the cards here, so.
Right. Yeah, and I even it's interesting. One thing that really stood out in Jill's reporting was that an exchange where James Siva, one of the representatives of the tribes, got DraftKings to promise not to bring prediction markets to California, even though, as we'll discuss with Dennis Ehling coming up, those are already fully available there. But yeah, they absolutely do hold all the cards, and they're pushing it as far as they can. It sure seems.
I mean, and as you point out, they hold all the cards when it comes to state-sponsored legalized gambling in California. But as we're probably going to find out in our interview and later this month, where they don't hold any cards when it comes to what the feds think about prediction markets.
Right.
So,
Yeah,
it's
I
a
mean, California has always been sort of this, tipping point state there, or the grand prize of the whole sports betting things, but it's also I think I guess going to be a key focus of all the gray market stuff that's going on too, because California, based on just the size of their population, everyone is watching everything that happens there, legal, illegal, and all points in between.
Well, the problem right now, I think, if I'm a tribal leader, if I'm looking at this and reading the tea leaves, right? Like, I think better to act as quickly as possible, because once the CFTC allows prediction markets, which seems like a foregone conclusion, like they're the ones that are going to the prediction markets are going to have the strength, the first mover status in the state. And by the
Right.
time, this stuff gets legalized in California, it'd be like if you're on the Price is Right. Like, let's say you just put a new kitchen in your house, and then you go on the Price is Right, and you win, and you get to the Showcase Showdown, and they're just giving you like an oven and a refrigerator and a brand new kitchen. You're like,
Right.
I don't really need it
Right.
anymore, So
Well,
I don't
so
know. Yeah, I mean, I think this is, obviously, we live in interesting times in the grand scheme of things when it comes to sports betting. But like, yeah, at the it's very possible that by the time California and the tribes and the operators get their act together, it's kind of too late, right?
right, that the whole paradigm could have shifted by that by them not act. If they're talking 2028 legalization to launch in 2029, that is 11 years after PASPA fell. And yeah, a lot can happen when you wait 11 years to get something done. And yeah, but I just want to tip the cap to you, Jeff, for analyzing this with references to Ricken, Jimmy Buffett, and The Price is Right. That's the holy trinity of random references to work into a gambling story.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Appreciate you noticing.
I'm always hanging on your every word, Jeff. Even if you can't talk for 25 hours straight, you cram a lot of good material into a shorter time span.
I do what I can.
Yes. All right. Enough of that. As noted at the top, the real top story in the industry this week is the one that we're covering in our interview. So, shall we get to that?
Please.
As the topic of sports prediction markets keeps getting more and more contentious, it's time to have a gaming law expert on the podcast to help us make sense of it. So it is now our pleasure to welcome a Los Angeles-based partner in the firm of Blank Rome, a gaming industry law specialist for about the last 20 years, Dennis Ehling. Dennis, thanks so much for joining us on Low Rollers.
It's my pleasure. Thanks, Eric.
So, in just the last few days, we had the major news of Kalshi suing regulators in Nevada and New Jersey who are trying to stop Kalshi from offering sports markets, followed by Ohio and now Illinois piling on and joining Nevada and New Jersey and telling Kalshi and others to cease and desist. Break this down for us. How did it get to this point? What do you see as a lawyer in terms of what Kalshi thinks its case is and what these states think their cases are?
Yeah, all right. So I'll try not to give you the long-winded, but I'll try and give a little more focused story. First, start with what is the CFTC? I think that's important for us to recognize here. CFTC is the federal agency that is empowered by Congress, created by Congress to regulate the trading of commodity and commodity futures primarily. Going back into the late 90s, early 2000s, they started to get more and more into regulating some of the sort of secondary financial assets. So you're dealing with things like swap transactions, credit default swaps, things like that. Coming out of the 2008 financial crisis, Congress in the Dodd-Frank Act put some more teeth, a little bit more teeth into the law, the Commodities Exchange Act, to give the CFTC a little bit more regulatory authority, although it left a whole lot of discretion to what the CFTC could do. But a little bit more regulatory authority around these sort of, I would call them more exotic financial products. So that's the background of CFTC. What started to happen going back, I mean, I will tell you, I was consulted by clients on this back in the early 2000s. Folks started to look and say, hey, well, wait a minute now. If I can do a prediction market, which is a type of market that the CFTC regulates, where I can make a prediction on the outcome of an uncertain event. So again, historically, it was the outcome of a crop harvest, right? Go back to the movies. We all remember, I think it was Trading Places and
Right.
the orange, the orange concentrate, right? Same concept. Or what's going to happen in the future? It's something we don't know a whole lot about today. So that's a prediction market. If I can have a prediction market on the outcome of something like commodity, in an orange futures or oil and gas or anything like that. I could also do it on the outcome of other things, such as a political contest or such as a sporting event. And so, in the last, really the last 10, 15 years, there have been people kind of dabbling around the edges, trying to say, can we do prediction markets as a CFTC regulated transaction around sporting events? And in the in, geez, I want to say around 2020 was the latest effort before this current round. There was a company called ErisX that proposed a market that would be around NFL futures. Now, significantly, when they were proposing it, it was limited to what we call big players or designated or excuse me, eligible contract participants. In other words, really professional broker dealers, extremely high net worth individuals having, at least $5 to $10 million in assets, or entities with a lot to that they can afford to risk. And back in 2021, December 2020, ErisX proposed their NFL futures contracts, and the CFTC did not formally reject that, but let's just put it this way: ErisX pulled their request immediately before what was clearly anticipated to be a rejection of the proposal by the CFTC. And I would say clearly anticipated because one of the commissioners actually, right after the proposal was pulled, wrote a lengthy, I guess you'd call it an editorial. It was sort of a dissent saying, I'm publishing this because I actually think that the CFTC doesn't have clear enough guidelines on what it's supposed to do here. And I think this is a problem. And they th he said, I think it's a problem that that ErisX pulled this because we have no ability now to have this public debate. So that's what that was sort of the background. In at the same time this is happening, of course, we've got since May 14th of 2018, when the Supreme Court opened the lid, as it were, on sports betting, we've had now 40 jurisdictions in the U.S., I think 39 states plus D.C., who have legalized sports betting, and most instances legalized online sports betting. So you have this sort of clash of, on the one hand, the states, which are licensing, heavily regulating, charging pretty high licensing fees, and taxing all anyone who wants to offer sports betting. And on the other hand, you've got this sort of CFTC sitting there with this idea of prediction markets. And then the last, really the last 5 months, it came out the maybe 6 months ago, a couple of experienced players in the CFTC world started putting out the, again, prediction markets, and they proposed these prediction markets on sporting events. The first one was Kalshi, followed by Robinhood and crypto, crypto.com. What happened here, and there's a little bit of a, I know it's a little bit of getting into wonky on this, but a little bit of the background. When you, if you and I wanted to propose a prediction market on, say, I don't know, who's going to win the Oscars next year, right? We could, in theory, put that out. How we would do it, if we are qualified individuals, qualified entities to do it with the CFTC, we could propose a prediction market. And then we that market, we are entitled to establish that market unless the CFTC objects. What happened in the ErisX circumstance is that the CFTC said, wait a minute, don't do this, let us examine it. It's called a 90-day review period. And if we examine it and we decide you can't go forward, we object, it can't go forward. But if we don't decide in that 90-day period that it can't go forward, the way the law is written, you can go ahead and publish that market and start selling transactions, trades on that market. What happened with Kalshi in the fall of last year is that they promoted, said to the CFTC, we think we should be able to do this. They proposed the markets. And in that instance, fall of 2024, not a whole lot happening around the country politically. CFTC didn't act. They let it proceed. And so in the late fall, Cauchy started offering these prediction markets under the auspices of this of CFTC authority, under the auspices of, really of the Commodities Exchange Act authority. But between you and maybe anyone can look at this, it looks just like you're taking a bet on a single game. And the bets are not between $1 million, multi-million-dollar, high net worth individuals or companies. It could be me. I place a $40 bet on a game with Kalshi, sitting here at my desk today. So, it raises a bunch of questions for those 40 states that are regulating this. Frankly, it also raises some questions for states like where I live, California, that aren't regulating it. And we've had quite a debate out here. Should we have sports betting? A big state like Texas also having that debate. And right now, anyway, I'm able to sit here and go on and place a bet on Kalshi or do a prediction event. So, long-winded answer. Hope it gives us something to start with.
Yeah, and so with these states that are now pushing back just in these last couple of days, as this heads into courts or goes in front of judges or however it shakes out, is the key to this going to be someone determining whether the CFTC has more oversight than the states? Is that ultimately what's going to decide this, is who has the jurisdiction?
Yeah, it's absolutely going to be a battle of jurisdiction. And let's talk a little bit about a history here. So the last 125 years, the history in this in the United States has been that gaming is regulated, licensed, approved or not approved entirely at the state level. So except for what turned out to be an ill-fated effort under PASPA that the Supreme Court eventually struck down in 2018, Congress has not tried to say what gambling cannot be authorized, nor has Congress tried to say what gambling must be authorized. They've left it to the states. It's a long history. It's, over 100, 125 years, really, the 20th and 21st centuries. That's been the background. And Congress arguably, it almost certainly probably has the ability under the Constitution, under the Commerce Clause, to say, you know what? No, we're going to set some nationwide policy that will govern in every state. They haven't, and for a whole lot of political reasons over the years and policy reasons, Congress has stayed out of that. So the question is right now, is the reading of the act that Congress enacted, the Commodities Exchange Act, is the reading that says, no, this is actually something CFTC can approve. Is that reading actually correct? And if it's correct, does that actually supersede the ability of the states to not approve it? And on the one hand, you've got the battles we sort of talk about, New Jersey and Ohio and Illinois and Nevada, all who have expressed their vested interest in licensing, the heavy duty regulation that they impose, the taxes, obviously, and license fees they collect. But on the other hand, you've got states again, like whether that's Texas or California, or states that just generally do not allow gambling, Hawaii and Utah, to say, hey, no, we don't want this gambling, full stop. And so it's really going to be a question of which prevails. Does the federal government and the supremacy clause of the Constitution prevail, or does the state's individual rights to regulate gambling within their borders prevail?
As you're about to find out, I am not a states' rights scholar. Actually, we could just eliminate states' rights from that sentence, and it would still be true. So, under the CFTC wording, sports betting, sports prediction markets would seem to fit, right? Because it's an unknown, correct? So, if they, it seems to me, to my ears, it seems like, politics aside, and the current administration and who's in charge of the CFTC aside, It seems like it would be kind of a narrow reading to not allow it. And it would also seem like if let's say they don't allow it, would that open up like New Jersey now to say, well, we don't want trading on orange contracts either?
So where I think that where that question really is going to meet the road here is whether or not gaming can or should be excluded. So the way that the CEA, the statute itself is written, there is authority for the CFTC to specifically exclude contracts that are deemed not to be in the public interest. And within that, in fact, is gaming. Gaming is one of the areas specifically enumerated by Congress as the CFTC can say, hey, look, this shouldn't happen under a CFTC regulated exchange. There are also other things, political markets and things like that, that Congress has given the CFTC authority to say shan't happen. Then they get also get into, and we were talking a little bit about supremacy clause, you also get into the question of even if the CFTC says, you know what, no, we actually think that this is fine. We have the discretion to say whether or not these contracts could go forward, whether or not we should have sports prediction markets. We consider it to be something that's within our jurisdiction. It's not entirely clear that it is. So a couple of things around that. First, the way that Congress wrote the CEA, this battle of who has jurisdiction and who is supreme isn't actually all that clear. On there's a if you look at the lawsuit that Cauchy filed in New Jersey, similar one in Nevada, what they argued is right at the front of the statute, it says the CFTC has jurisdiction over all of this, and the supremacy clause therefore preempts anything that's inconsistent. So it looks like, oh wow, straight up, if they say it, it automatically applies. However, as you read down in the statute, Congress had two places where it was very explicit, saying no state law around gaming supersedes this, that the authority of the CFTC in the following areas, and was very specific in the following areas. All of those areas, it turns out, at least at an initial reading, all those areas seem to be the areas where you've got the original model I was talking about before, people trading on either registered exchanges with the CFTC for orange juice futures, or folks who are very high net worth or professional broker dealers or large entities trading as what's called eligible contract participants. Right, so you've got a lot that you can risk, you're sophisticated, etc. So there's an argument, and again, I don't that hasn't been tested, we don't know where it's going to go, but there's definitely an argument that says the CFTC has absolute authority to enforce and allow trading on orange juice, on cotton, on coffee, on all of those things. But what Congress said as to gaming, right? The gaming statutes are not preempted unless it's dealing with these sort of transactions amongst high net worth individuals, not the sort of retail transaction that I can do from my desk right here in California, you could do from your desk.
Is there, let's say the CFTC rules in favor of Robinhood, Kalshi, and all that, would states like New Jersey, Ohio, Illinois, Nevada, others, would they have recourse? Like, could they take this to court,
Yes.
basically? They could go all the way.
Yeah, they can. They absolutely can take it to court, and
Right.
in fact, to arguably, Cauchy jumped the gun and said, "We're gonna challenge it now. We're gonna find out." Because if you read the complaint in that Cauchy filed in New Jersey as well as Nevada, the argument they have made explicitly is this is 100% comes down to preemption. Does the CFTC authority preempt any ability of the states to block this? And that is a 100% question of jurisdiction. That's a question that belongs to the courts. The court's going to be the final arbiter of that. And I think it's reasonable to think that this will certainly it's going to go to a court of appeal. Will it make it all
Right.
the way to the Supreme Court? Don't know. But at least
Yeah.
we'll go to the courts of
All
appeal.
right. Now that I'm an expert in this after learning about it for the last 15 minutes, that's my prediction. CFTC rules in favor of Robinhood Kalshi, et cetera. Supreme Court eventually overturns it 5, 6 years down the road. Mark it down, write it down, put it on your chalkboard. That's my prediction.
Well, I will give you a prediction that at least supports one part of yours. The person named to be the chair of the CFTC, Brian, I think it's Quintes or
All right.
Kentes.
Right.
I mean, this is a fellow who was until
Yes.
very recently on a board member of Kalshi. I think
Right.
his view of what this should apply
It's going to carry
is
some weight.
probably reasonable to predict.
Yeah.
All right, and I'll finish up by throwing a prediction at you, Dennis, that you've never been asked this question before. That's my prediction. Here it is. Your bio says you're an avid cyclist and a wine collector. If
Yes.
offered, would you compete in an Olympic biathlon type sport that combines bicycling with chugging wine?
Only because I know that I can absolutely compete on the wine end. You know, sometimes you got to be really strong on one of those two things.
Right.
I can keep up on the bike, but I will absolutely do my best on the wine end, and I think I can probably compete with pretty much anyone.
Challenge accepted. I'm gonna have to skip the bike part, though.
Well, this has been great, Dennis. I appreciate you explaining this stuff to us. You turned Jeff into an expert in 15 minutes and hopefully turned a lot of our listeners into, if not experts, at least closer to expert than they were when we started. So thanks so much for your time and your insight and for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again to Dennis, another outstanding podcast guest. And speaking of outstanding podcast guests, last week we had Brad Feinberg on, and he gave us a bunch of his favorite season-long MLB futures, and I ended up betting five of them. Not sure if you got any bets down yourself. Did you follow any of his advice, Jeff?
I wanted to, and then I, but I'm only going to bet like $5 or $10, and just wasn't didn't seem worth it, worth it to like
Right.
sit around for 6 months. But I don't know.
Okay. I don't bet too much more than that on my futures, but I still did feel it was
Right.
worth it for just a few of them. Like I said, I did five, and most of them, we're a week into the season. It's way too soon to be either optimistic or pessimistic, but there are two already worth commenting on. One, I feel like I'm in line for a fun sweat, hopefully all season long, on Mariners closer Andrés Muñoz to lead the league in saves at 28-1. That was what Brad said he was, and indeed that price was still there. He has three saves through six games, tied for the league lead. Obviously, a little early to start feeling good about it, but like I said, it makes for a fun sweat until I find out in the next 24 hours that he needs Tommy John or something. The one that I bet that I'm already starting to think in my mind a little bit about counting my money on, Braves under 93 and a half
Yeah.
wins. They are 0-7 with a brutal come from ahead loss to the Dodgers last night. I realize seven games is a tiny sample size, and they played two top teams, the Padres and Dodgers, on the road to open the season. So the 0-7 start is not disqualifying. Doesn't show that they're not going to contend for the playoffs or whatever. But as a Phillies fan who bet the Braves under,
Got
couldn't
feeling
ask for a
good.
better start.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's the little things in life sometimes, Jeff. And an 0-7 start for the Braves is one of those little things I'm clinging to right now.
Yeah, I think that they got the Profar was suspended for, I
That
don't
too,
know,
right?
there seems to be a dark cloud over Atlanta for the first time in, I mean, what, 30 years that
Well,
they might not be contending.
first regular season dark cloud over the
Right.
Braves. In the playoffs, the dark cloud almost always seems to
That's
get
true.
them, but
That's
yeah.
true. All right, listen. Let's. I'm gonna finish this up. I'm gonna reference another cultural touchstone here.
Okay.
The late great George Carlin. Man, I wish he was still around. You know what I mean? But he said the following. Think of how stupid the average person is, and then realize half of them are stupider than that. I mentioned this as a result of a story we just published over at Casino Reports that I did on the no good, terrible, horrible VIP industry and online gambling. The stories of VIP hosts preying on their customers has crossed the mainstream media blood-brain divide. The only issue here, as Carlin would have, agreed, is that brains are pretty much stupid. Here's what I mean by that. Based on my own reporting and based on common sense, it would appear that some 99.9% of people in VIP programs are doing just fine. A handful get out over their skis, which is objectively bad, obviously. But if you just read the quote unquote mainstream media, you're only getting the one side, which is the wildly minority side, which makes it seem that VIP programs are 99.9% predatory. In turn, this almost makes you wonder about everything else you consume news-wise as a result. You know, listen, we all take what we read, what we hear, what we listen to from the news as gospel, whether we get it from MSNBC or whether we get it from Fox, or for that matter, whether we get it from Occupy Democrats or the Daily Caller, right? You know, and we take this information and we funnel it through our own, you know, biases and we go from there. Well, you know what? That's stupid. You're stupid and I'm stupid. We're all stupid. We're like lemmings, a whole lot of us. The only way out, critical thinking, Eric. Remember when half of us loved Elon Musk and the other half hated him? And now we've all switched sides? There's a pretty good example of a definite lack of critical thinking going on, you know, countrywide. So what am I trying to say? And I say this also as a communications professor. Don't trust the media at face value, right? And yes, the coverage of the VIP issue in the mainstream media has sparked this because the average news consumer would definitely think VIP programs aren't the devil, right? And we need to take in all sides of an issue before we cement our feet in a position. People are stupid. Let's try to be less stupid. Until next week, we are low rollers, small stakes, and hot takes.